Human design is a part science, part spiritual system that tells you who you came here to be. You have your own blueprint, your own way of becoming successful, your own way your dreams are going to come true, the way you'll experience the most joy and fulfillment. The instruction manual for how to move through the world is custom to you. When you act according to that manual, when you act as the real you, everything in life comes to you with more ease and less resistance. We all know we're different, yet we're still acting like there's one way to do life. Let's talk about it. To find out your design and the designs of the people in your life, you can visit myhumandesign.com or download the My Human Design app in the App Store and on Google Play.
A friend of mine recently was sharing with me that she has a lot of trouble prioritizing her creative work outside of her full-time job. And that's something that you've shared a lot of different perspectives on with me. One of them being that if something is a priority, you will do it. And if it's not a priority, you can't do anything really to get yourself to do it. So can you kind of explain your take on this?
Yeah, this is the biggest cornerstone of human design is that the mind is not in charge of our process and our timing. So a lot of the times, because we are energy readers, we can kind of feel when it's time to, you know, do the breakup, start the fitness regime, get into a different creative pursuit on the side. But it's almost like we recognize it, we feel it swirling around us before the actual time to do it is. And that's when our minds can kind of interfere and say, well, then you have to come up with a plan of how you're going to do it. And then you should start on Monday. And how do you know? And da da da. And actually, the interesting thing is that it wouldn't make a blind bit of difference if you're meant to start that thing in 3 months' time. It doesn't make a blind bit of difference if you torture yourself in the meantime before those 3 months, jumping on a creative train 25 times in 3 months and then falling off it. If you were just meant to do it and it was supposed to flow seamlessly, when your cognition and your body are on the same page, that's when it's very easy for things to move. And that just only happens once, whether you try it 25 times before that or not. So the interesting thing is almost to sit with something, have the awareness of it, and then try to notice when the mind gets in the way of, well, you need to do it now because, and then listen out for the stories, because you need another side hustle, or because someone will think well of you, or you will think well of yourself if you have the side hustle, or whatever fears come up. And I want to say on the note of fears that fears are not a bad thing. You know, having fears is usually something that either shows you something you have to tend towards in yourself to figure out whether it's real or not. Or a fear is actually helping your intuition get sharper, helping you be more aware, helping your process, right? Like if you're afraid of something not working out, that's a beautiful thing, because you should use that as fuel to think about what are the things you can do to give it the best chance of working out, right? It pulls you towards the energy of excellence and bringing that to whatever you're going to do. So a lot of the time when we mentally shut ourselves into starting something or doing something, that's when we feel the resistance. And the part that crushes me is that when we're then unable to do it, we go, it's because I'm lazy, or because I'm lacking motivation, or because I'm lacking whatever. Whereas, you know, in those moments where you feel like you don't have a choice but to do that thing, because there has been an internal measuring of pros and cons in your body, and it's almost like the cons are so much bigger than the pros, right? You can't afford to have the cons. And the pros are so much bigger than the cons, in the sense that you can't not have the pros, one or the other. That's what moves us into action. So sometimes, for example, it's when you finally had enough of your own BS. That's going to be the thing that makes you quit the drinking or the bad habit or the codependency or the whatever. And that's where life uses those moments, those rock bottoms, those finally had enough, those whatever. And we have to put our hand in that fire sometimes to not only conceptualize how bad it is, like, oh, I've understood how bad alcohol is for me because everyone told me 100 times, and because I saw people on Instagram saying they quit it. That doesn't even hold a candle on the fuel of the feeling when you're like, I need to do this, or I am so sick of this in myself. I am I'm sick of the feeling and I'm after a different feeling. So we've defaulted this process of change to our minds to micromanage, when actually it's so much more quick and simple and aligned to let that thought swell until it actually clicks into place in your body and your body's ready to move. And I say this as if it's simple, but it's so hard to do. It is so hard to do because we are intelligent and sometimes we're too intelligent for our own good, where we're then just like, well, just do it. What's wrong with you? Why can't you do this? You see everyone else acting on it. But here's the thing. If we have a specific amount of life force that we can channel through ourselves, then anytime we're mentally forcing something, that is a cost to our life force. That is a use. We are spending a token of life force on that thing, and it isn't going to get as much bang for its buck than if we, for example, just kept that life force free to maybe be surprised by what other options would become available to us with the universe if we're showing up with available life force. And this is existentially a very difficult thing to do, because a lot of the time we would almost rather deplete ourselves than just be in that empty space where there's unknown of we could be spending it or we could just be sitting on it. And that's terrifying for a lot of people, but especially for generators, right? Because their conditioning is that you have to be doing things all the time for others in order to lift them up, rather than can I sit on this kind of sacral, right? That gut of yours that is just sitting there quietly churning. And as it churns away, something locks in from the universe and says, hey, do you want this? Hey, now that you're available to see and you don't have blinders on because you're not running down some other, you know, rabbit hole or trail, what about doing this other thing? And maybe you can walk past something 100 times and you've never seen it. And then all of a sudden, because your life force isn't completely depleted, your eyes can see more. And we all know that feeling. You know, when you eat really healthy, all of a sudden your quality of thoughts is just better and it's just easier to think well. It's that same way. Or when you slept well, you're just going to be in a nice mood, right? Things will trigger you less. It's the same thing. When we're not depleting ourselves into the ground, we're almost building up this momentum for then when that lock-in with the soul and the body has happened, the one time that you actually need to make the decision, which is more than one time, then you have all this available energy, this excitement, this lack of fear around it, because you're not going to be like, oh my God, I've done it 25 times. Is the 26th one going to work out? It's going to be the first one you try. So I know this is like very nitty gritty, but it's to understand the energetics of just the time you feel a change coming in, the time you feel sort of mentally opened up, that's the first time the universe is like preparing you to do the thing, but that's not the time that it is to do the thing. Now, listen, there will be some times when, you know, something bottoms out and the, you know, band-aid gets ripped off of you. And that's when the universe is like, honey, you're ready for quick change on this specific topic of your life. But the other times when it wants to gently, gracefully introduce us to things is when you go, I need to start thinking about, I want to do stuff on the side, or, you know, maybe I should do a creative pursuit. But that's the time to let that new thing, that next level of your alignment, kind of sit in your aura for a while. And you kind of want to just like date it. You want to get used to what it feels like. You don't want to decide what it looks like yet, because the longer you sit with it and kind of play with it and flirt with it, it will maybe start to show more pixelated vision of itself, right? So sometimes you're like, I need a creative pursuit. You don't know what it is yet. Your mind is going to rush to be like, I need to figure out what it is, instead of being like, oh, I see you, creative pursuit. What else have you got to tell me? What else do you look like? Make yourself known. What color are you? You know? And we miss that process of getting to intimately know our soul's desires that are getting implanted in us as they're slowly happening, because we want to rush to know. Our addiction to the known is the biggest addiction that any of us have. And rightly so, because the unknown is terrifying. But whatever place you are at, whatever level of comfort you're at with your relationship to the unknown, just try to stretch yourself like a tiny bit more than you have previously. And this is such an important time to be talking about this, because there was a huge eclipse yesterday. And eclipses, it's interesting because they are accelerations and enzymatic catalysts of moving us towards our fate. So, you know, sometimes they get a bad reputation for being like, oh my God, this crazy thing happened out of nowhere, but things can also change on a dime. So being that we are post-eclipse today,
We and are you saying this Tuesday? Today's Tuesday, so it was yesterday?
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Cool.
So Monday, April the 8th was the Great American Eclipse. We're recording this a couple of days before the eclipse, but what literally happens during eclipses is that it's almost like, okay, you're kind of trundling along on your process of change, and an eclipse comes in to just kind of like speed the whole thing up. So it's like getting on an elevator towards your destiny. Now, obviously, the amount to which we are changing our consciousness is what dictates how quickly things can, you know, pop out of nowhere for us. But the reason why it's so important is because our addiction to the known holds back so much what the universe can give us in terms of actualizing our potential. None of us are using our potential even to the closest, you know, not even to a tenth, maybe let alone a hundredth of what we're capable of. And the reason, main reason why, is because we sit there going, no, but this is really good. Why would I want to let go of it? But if there's even a 5% of your soul that thinks there might be something better out there, then this is a really good time to say, okay, universe, just because my limited brain can't figure out that there is something better out there because I've never seen it before, I've never heard someone talk about it. If there is, feel free to remove the lesser version of it that's in my life, right? Whether that is the husband, the wife, the, you know, relationship to your parents, the business, the idea, the creativity, the piece of art you just made. And we cling on to things because of the amount of time sometimes they've taken from us. But one of the most important things that I think I learned from my initial Kabbalah teacher, Ruth, who I've spoken about before, is that that energy you put into something is never lost. So if you've invested time to getting to a relationship that is a 6 out of 10, then that's also where you're going to be starting your next relationship from. So just because things have changed form, the energy and time you've put into it is never lost. And the amount of alignment and growth you've had from it, you get to keep. And so it's okay to lose the form if the form is outdated and is no longer a vehicle or a right container to get you from the 6 to the 7 or the 7 to the 8. So the amount to which we can let go is also a trust in, okay, I haven't seen this. I don't know where this is going. I don't even think this life path exists. Why don't I, with this one experiment that I get with life, we may as well F around and find out. We may as well freaking see if something better than what I've ever thought possible exists. Well, at least for some of us, right? We feel like, why not? You know, show me what you got. And if something is, and this is the thing about letting go or being willing to let go, is that if something is still right for you and you said to the universe, just remove whatever's not right and it stays, then that's also beautiful because you know that it's in your life because you haven't, you're not clinging onto it. You're not the one who's micromanaging it. You're not the one who's doing all the work and itself is an expired form. So to go back to the initial question about your friend with her creative project, I would ask someone in a very practical way, why do I tell myself this has to happen now? What are there very real downsides to me not doing it today? Because I know that I will move on it so much more easily when, for example, they fire me from the job, or I'm, even if they haven't fired you, if she's also genuinely right now terrified of being fired or genuinely feels like leaving, she would do it. Right? Because that would be moving her and that would be fuel. So it really is truly that having is evidence of wanting. It's your actions that tell you your wants, not what your brain's narratives of what you think you want are, right? So if I think I want 3 homes, but the way I'm watching myself move through life is not about Googling homes or saving up for a home, or I'm not doing any of the evidential support towards that. There is a part of me that actually for now doesn't want 3 homes, right? So it's like our actions tell us more about what we want than what we tell ourselves we want. And so for her, I would gather up that evidence of saying, hold on a second. There's a part of me that's so creative and it's unexpressed and it's there and it's so cool and it's so exciting and let me get to know it. But clearly right now, I either have some fears that I need to work through, or it's just not the time. And I know that when the time comes, it will be easy. Floodgates will open. I'll stay up all night creating a painting that would have taken me 3 weeks to make 3 weeks worth of half-done paintings that I didn't even like. And that's how that creative expression, that creative energy moves through the universe, is like when our vessel is truly ready. And we cannot force that to happen. We can get out of the way, right? By cleaning up the fears, by cleaning up the blocks, by facing our stuff and feeling the how much it's costing us and getting sick and tired of our own BS. But we cannot rush the timing of when the new things come in. And that's where it sounds to me like she is.
Right. And one of the questions too was, what about this advice that you have to write for 10 minutes a day or you're never going to like amount to anything? Like that kind of advice. What would you say to people who are listening to that advice, but struggling to actually reap the benefits of what someone else has said that they achieved through that?
I think that works when what is holding you back is a fear of actually doing it, you know, like putting the pen to paper. And so that is working through a fear if it works for you, because you've just taken an action to that ends up disproving the fear. But so every action in itself could have so many different energetic layers. So writing the 10 minutes a day is right for you if you know that one of your things that you struggle with embracing is devotion. I don't want to say discipline, but I want to say devotion. I want to say commitment to yourself. Feeling like your life, your creativity matters, right? Those kinds of stories, that's when that works. But for every person that unlocks a lot of movement for, and who's finally then ready to receive the creative expression from the universe, there's also a person who does a 40-day meditation practice or does a 10 minutes a day writing for a month, but clearly their soul is still not ready to become a writer. So they'll write 10 minutes of stuff every day, but that's not necessarily the thing in itself that's conducive to you doing the thing. And this is where human design becomes so powerful, because when you feel like you do have a goal and you feel it in your body and it is ready, then you can know based on your design which parts of your energy and how to throw those parts of your energy behind the goal. So let's take, for example, if you have an open root center, which is the bottom center in your chart, and it's white, okay? If that center is open, then you need pressure from the outside world to filter it through your body, to take in external pressures and ride on those pressures to get stuff done. So if you have an open root, and we talk about this a lot, then setting yourself a timeline or a deadline or having someone else's expectations that you have to meet up for is helpful. If you have an open ego center, which is that teeny little almost outlier, that's that small triangle in the middle of your chart that's just right of center from the sacral, the gut, that one, if you have that open, you are not supposed to be consistently motivated. Instead, your motivation runs in waves. And so sometimes you can really be wanting something, and that's the time to throw all your energy behind getting something done. And then there's other times you wake up and you're like, I don't care that much about having money, having success, having fame, having impact, having whatever. And this is so important to remember, because that doesn't mean that you're not going to have those things. It just means that your motivation for them, your heart wanting them, is going to wane. And that's a beautiful part of the human experience. And that one is such an important one to talk about, because 70% of the population has an open heart. That is the highest percentage of a population of any of the centers to have open. And so we are living in this culture that tells us all the time, you have to be thinking about money, success, fame, impact, da 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 da. And yet most of the population has it open and empty. And so think about how programmable the majority of humans are to be conditioned into this not self of you have to be chasing that shit all the time. And that's why the worst conditioning we're in is a capitalist, consumerist, overly hungry, you know, Western society. What I find so sort of reassuring now is that people are really redressing that. Like, we are realizing we don't need 25 different outfits for a weekend. We care more now, which is giving me so much hope. We care more now about just traveling with carry-on. We don't care about having 25 skincare products. We don't care about having 5 homes, because you can only be in one at the same time. You know, we're more into renting a house for a week instead of having one that you have to look after for the entire year. So that is getting readdressed. And I think it is because we reached a peak conditioning, and therefore amplification of that want, that egoic heart drive. So anyway, point being, when you get to know your human design, you get to know how to use your energy on certain things. So just the basic thing, for example, rudimentary, is if you're a generator, that thing starts to excite you, you can do it every day and it will give you more energy. If you're a projector, no matter how fired up you are about something, don't fool yourself with this false adrenalization that's going to happen if you do it for a full day. And then you're like, oh my God, I'm going to do the same thing every day, because you will crash. So you need to make sure that you put barricades on yourself, on your own energy, of tap out before you feel like you've, you know, reach this peak and chase this high of adrenalization, because you feel like that's what's going to be the thing that makes you productive. I notice it with myself with workouts all the freaking time. I have to stop myself before I reach that point that my mind goes, oh, I've worked out, because now I feel like I'm on top of the world. And I have to rein it in and stop before I get to that point, because I know that my energy, I'm then not going to be able to move for the next 3 days just because I had a really fun, intense one. And there's nothing wrong with that. Once in a way, if you know that that's what it's going to do, right? But then you pay, you know what it's going to cost you. But for things like creative stuff or breakups, things that really move the needle on our lives, then it's really good to know your design.
Yeah. And to do with the open ego, so if you're looking at your chart on the app, basically you can tap any of the energy centers and it will tell you what it's called. If you have the root or the ego open or white, that's what Jenna's referring to. But also, you've shared with me before, and I might butcher this, so correct me if I'm wrong, that inconsistent motivation, there's a purpose to the ebb and flow of motivation, where we think like, oh, if I'm not going to be consistently motivated towards this thing, I'm never going to make it happen. So can you explain the purpose of the ebb and flow of that?
Yeah. So the way I put it with people who have that open ego center is that you have to pull the arrow back for it to launch forward the quickest, right? Think about when people play that bow and arrow thing. It's like you pull until there's that tension, and that's when you let it go. And the further you pull it back, the further it's going to go. So that's what's interesting about those kinds of people, which is 70% of the population. And I've used this example before, where someone like Tony Robbins, who has a defined ego center, you go to his talk and he has this massive, strong ego center, which is also called the heart center, right? Ego is not, we don't talk about ego in this sense of, you know, the false you or the persona. The ego center is about this heart wanting things, feeling entitled for things, going after these wants that it has. Okay. So you're in his energy. He's in a room of 20,000 people. He's blasting this strong heart energy out. If you have an open ego center, you're feeling that. And anytime you have a center that's open, you are maximizing and amplifying what you're getting. So if he's radiating it 6 out of 10, it's going through your body like a 12 out of 10. You're on that weekend and you're like, F yeah, we're going to go for it. We're going to do this. We're going to do this every day and da da da, and bring it on and life. And I want 20 houses like Tony. And then you leave and all that energy has left your ego center. And then you're like, oh my God, what's wrong with me? Because what's happened is you've reset back to your open ego, which kind of has these ebbs and flows. And you're like, you're in an open time of it. And you're like, hold on a second, I'm not coursing anyone else's want energy through me. What's wrong with me? Maybe I'm never going to get to my goals. What if I never end up doing stuff? And that's not the way to handle it. So the way that you handle it is, the times you don't want things, that's when you don't move on them. You just do other stuff. Like if you're a generator, you just keep on doing stuff you love, right? Because that's what makes up your every day, is loving every day, right? That's what makes a good life. And then you don't think about wanting things. And then all of a sudden, a burst will come and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so motivated by making an impact with this thing that I do. And maybe it was just an impact that you were supposed to make on one person for 2 days. And who knows, that's probably going to get you further than trying to mentally with your mind micromanage how you make an impact on 20,000 people for 20,000 days, right?
Yeah.
So it's again, thinking that we know the effects of what we're naturally driven to, whereas actually the best effects we're going to have is by doing what we're naturally driven to. But it's really difficult conditioning.
We have such a hard time with that. Like, even me, as you're saying it, because you have a defined ego. So you do have, and my mom has one, and it's so cool to watch, but I don't. And so I know what it feels like to not have that consistent movement towards something, it's so hard to believe that you'll ever do anything. Like, what would you say that, I guess the question is, how do we trust our own volition towards things? That's the best way I can think to explain it. And that it's gonna get done, or we're gonna get to some sort of like finish line.
What I would say is that if you take it back to your strategy and authority, life has already mapped out the track that it's gonna push you down if you're not interfering. And that track for every single person, because we are a human being, is an extraordinary track. It just is. And it's not because only certain special people warrant the extraordinary track. It's all, we have one each that is destined and written out for us. So we can only choose to get in the way of that or let it happen. The way we let it happen is our strategy and authority. And that's why we often joke about this, how some people, especially men who don't necessarily want to go deep on every center, we just tell them their strategy and authority and they're like, you know, they just zoom past everybody. Because your strategy, i.e. your energy type, and your authority, the way you make decisions, are the inbuilt sat-nav. That is the way to align to the path that is set out for you. And you, the key part of your question is, how do you trust? You don't trust before you try. You try, and then when you see how it works, then it becomes easier to trust. Where a lot of us are going wrong with making any changes in our lives, even internal things, is like, how do we know it's going to work out? You don't. You don't know how anything's going to work out. Even if 100,000 people have said this worked for them before, that gives us some weird comfort that it's going to work for us, but then you hear people that it doesn't work for. So it's like you have this one manual. There's this one path that only you can ever walk down. Of course, you don't want to freaking know where it's going to lead you. And you have, this is where the bravery piece comes in. And this is why it is the work of a warrior to say, I haven't got any clue that it's going to work out. But also, by the way, the other way isn't giving me any clue that it's going to work out. It's just an illusion that it's going to work out. So I may as well do this in the smallest ways possible. Trust my strategy and authority. So for example, let's say, and this is the conditioning, right? Life is saying to you, you can't get anywhere unless you are driven by success. Well, haven't you heard loads of people who end up being accidental successes? How about people who aren't driven by money and they just made up a video game when they were 17 in their parents' bedroom and then they made a shit ton of money from it, right? These resources that we think are everything are abundant. It's as easy for the universe to manifest a coin on the street as it is a castle. Like, it's like a breath for the universe. So we're orienting ourselves to the outcome rather than to the process. Whereas actually, if you orient yourself to the process, which is the becoming, the living your way, the being your natural organic self, asking yourself how you can be and become a person that you are proud of every single day and make decisions that feel natural and organic to you and be in that no rush to find out, you know, playing God basically on your own life and trying to run all the numbers on every single possible outcome. When you stay in that center, actually that is you becoming God rather than playing God, because you feel that sort of creative movement through you that is leading you in. Okay, actually, even though my brain says it's hard for me today to go off and paint something, because that means I'm not going to be at my desk job doing something, or I'm not going to be with my kids, and that means I'm being a good mother. You don't know what that's going to unlock before you try. But it's time we stop looking for other people to tell us what it's going to unlock before we try it, because they don't know our manual. At best, they're referencing their own, and they don't even know their manual. We don't even know ours.
I know.
So it's a total crapshoot that something that someone else says might be right or wrong, but we may as well not outsource it and find out our own. And the more you find out your own, the better you get at being familiar with your manual. So you trust by trying. And that's the part that's hard.
I can say from my own experience that I was the person, like before I was working with you, I was coming up with ideas, executing new businesses. They were going nowhere. I was like, what's my thing? What's my message? Like, I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off, like trying to concoct some sort of business to have. And it really was like right before we started, when I listened to my spleen to take your reader training, if you haven't heard the story of how we started working together, I think there's a podcast episode that we talk about it. I'll link it in the show notes if I can find it. But I really, when I listened to my spleen to take that training, that was a moment where I did kind of like release control, where I was like, I really don't know where this is going. I just trust myself. And when we started working together, even those conversations, you started as a client and I still had no idea where this was going. Like, I didn't understand. I didn't understand why my spleen was like, follow this direction. And now even like, as we work together, like the trajectory of the work that my, like what I do has evolved. I didn't think about that. It's like the first 3 years of my life where I have just let my body and my intuition lead every decision I've made. And it really is like my life gets more full with me being me. Like, I've learned too, now that I know my chart, I'm in every interaction in my life, I'm being the cross of explanation. I'm being a projector. I'm learning to not take responsibility for fixing other people's lives. I have that 3-5 energy in me and feeling like I'm responsible for other people's lives. And I'm really learning how to be me correctly in every area of life. And I can say that that's like far more fulfilling than the version of me that was trying to be consistently motivated. And who knows what happens from here? I don't know. I have no clue. And I do want you to circle back on, because you've explained like generators, like if they have this creative idea and they're, you know, flowing with it, you're like, well, you, if you're excited about something, you'll act upon it. Can you kind of speak to each of the other energy types, like a projector, like if you have this creative idea that won't leave you alone, like what does that look like if you're not feeling consistently motivated to do it?
Well, again, I think now that we've covered how the different centers work as well, there's obviously nuances compared to every, you know, depending on that as well as your energy type. But, you know, with generators, when something's really lighting you up, the part you have to be accountable for is respond to it, say yes to it, engage with it, go dance with it. With projectors, when something is really fascinating to you, you know, get really good at it and then let other people see you for it. And that doesn't mean you have to, you know, run Instagram ads. We've never run one in our lives, but it's more about just allowing yourself to be seen if someone wants to see you. So, you know, if you're at a family meet, you know, holiday on a family vacation or something, and someone asks you what you do, the work is to not shrink or hide or, you know, but also not push it on people, right? So that's how you use a strategy as a manifesting generator. Because it also is about responding like it is for generators, but because they are supposed to keep many pots on the fire and, you know, hold a lot of different balls in the air or juggle a lot at the same time, it's, you know what it is? This thing is working really well, but I trust that, oh my God, there's this other thing on the side that's just calling me and so secretly exciting and I really want to give it some time and energy. So let me give it, again, it doesn't have to be drastic. The universe doesn't necessarily want us to, you know, be crazy about it. It's just like, let me give it an hour of my time and just see what happens. Let me just sneak off of my normal job. And if you can, you know, afford to do that, obviously, and see if I, you know, if I just go down this little, put some energy into it and see what happens. And with everything anyway, it's always about energy exchange. And so what you do, and this is how you measure alignment in a very practical way, let me give it a little bit of energy and see if more comes back. And then I can give it more and then see if more comes back and then give it more. It's not, I need to get a board and I need to get a CTO and a CFO and throw so much money at it and whatever. Like that's not a message necessary usually to send to the universe, because first you've got to test it. First you've got to test these little roads and see what brings gold back to you. And so then with manifestors, it's all about informing, right? It's all about saying, this is what's coming through me. And it's sometimes just an urge to move a pillow. And sometimes it's an urge to sing a song or write a song or write a film at 3 a.m. or whatever it is. And they're equally the same size, because we think that moving a pillow isn't going to do us the same as writing a film script is. But if you know, a decorator sees you moving the pillow, then that starts up a conversation and then they want to hire you or they want you to consult for them, or you never know. So it's about those little things that you stop asking other people permission for when you just fancy doing something. When life is like, yeah, I just felt like moving the pillow. Didn't know why, I just did. And then with reflectors, it's almost, you know, it's the opposite in many ways, because there's a slowness to it where it's like, don't be spontaneous. If something has revisited you multiple times and you felt like doing something again and again, and it's not even that you felt like doing it, it's almost like life has said, what about this? And it's just this quiet whisper that's come to you over and over again. Enough times where you're like, okay, this is a consistent nudge I'm getting from the universe, not just a one-off nudge. Not just a one-off nudge that I'm feeling because I'm in this person's energy and they are a theta healer. So now all of a sudden I want to learn theta healing. Let me wait and see if theta healing, you know, revisits me many times in many different environments over the course of a month. Then that's when you act on it. And that's just, I'm glad that you brought that up, because that's just a very rudimentary of like, this is how you put things into action when right. You know that your body is ready. And that's important that we covered that.
Yeah. And two, I've also observed with you as a projector, when even when you do have this already established business, if you have an idea that comes to you, you're not like, got to happen right now. It's not like this, like pushing, forcing forward of like, once the idea comes, the execution has to follow. You really let things percolate until your body physically moves towards creating that thing.
Mm-hmm. And I think everybody can learn to read their own energy in this way, where you know when you're mentally excited about something, but you feel like it's not fully cooked yet. And that doesn't mean you sit around forever and don't act on it. It just means that when you feel like there's the heart is engaged, you know, when you feel like there is meaning from inside you.
Says the defined ego.
Well, how would you put it? How would you put it then for you?
For me, and it is that. It's the same. I'm joking.
But yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
It is the same, but because we will have, with an open ego, that moment where the heart does feel engaged, where it's like, my heart is in it.
Yeah.
But that's why what I was saying, it's so hard for us to trust that. Having it inconsistent, like not knowing when it's going to appear, makes you feel like it's never going to appear. But like, that is what you do. You, even with a defined ego, but I think if you had an open ego, it would be the same. It would just feel slightly different. You let things percolate. You let things sort of, you know, zhuzh into existence before you try to like take them by the reins.
And it's very selfish as well, because it's just a way to not spend, like, waste your energy on things.
Exactly. But that's true for all of us, preserving your energy. That's why this is so key, is because we're running around, like I said, with chickens with our heads cut off, like just trying to do things all the time. And that's actually getting us out of, like, and you said, we only have those tokens at the beginning. You said, we only have so many tokens. It's better to just hold on to your token.
I love that way of putting it. That's so brilliant. Exactly. You know, it's like when you're a kid and they give you like play money, and then you like, you know, you're the one that spends it the quickest, and then you're like, hold on a second.
It's better to keep it close until there's something really worth putting it into.
Yeah, exactly. And our energy is our currency. Our energy, our intention, and our actions are our currency. So as much as we are living in a time when it seems like there's no downside to just spending the shit out of it, because you can be on TikTok and Netflix and in some kind of news political debate all day long, like, that does have an opportunity cost. It's just that we're not necessarily able to see it, because there's no obvious downside to any of that stuff. And there's no obvious upside to not doing it for an hour of your time, maybe sometimes. But if you let those hours compound, my God, the wisdom that comes to you, my God, the change, my God, the growth. So much of our transformation spiritually and consciousness wise happens in those moments. If we learn to kind of create barriers around them a little bit. I was saying that to a friend of mine today, that, you know, we can learn spirituality through words and through hearing things and through reading. But when you really learn to open up your energy to a greater degree, witnessing just beauty and art and creative expression and color and shapes in the world can teach you as well. But we can't be taught by those things. We need the more concrete, obvious words sometimes, because that's what kind of gets us back into that space of the open heart. But when you're sitting in that space, right? Then you can go on a trip and it be the most transformational spiritual experience of your life, even if you're just, you know, going to, well, he's in Tokyo. It's Kevin.
Yeah.
Who was on the podcast a few weeks ago. And he said Tokyo has been the most transformational spiritual experience of his life. But it's because he's sitting there like being moved by these temples, and not just, oh, it's pretty, but like feeling into the reverence these people must have had and the energy around it. And oh my gosh, wow, this is what happens when, you know, you notice different angles on it. This is what happens when someone cares so much about something greater than themselves that it moves them to build this, right? That's a noticing that you can only have when you're not spending your energy on the literal all the time. And we're programming our brains to see stuff at face value all the time. So there is this different kind of switch you can upgrade to that comes from preserving your energy. And that's why it is important, because that's what unlocks our genius, our creative expression, our ideas, our ahas. Like, what else aside from empty brain time do those things pop to us through? No other place in the history of forever, in the history of every human being that has ever lived, has it not come from an open brain state, even if it's inspired by someone else, from that openness to receive within. So as long as you are committed to something that is a lower fuel, you are making the choice to not have it available to something greater. And that's why it really matters now. And I'm so happy we're talking about this in post-eclipse season, because this is what really matters.
Right. And I think you have told me that you want to do a workshop in the app about mass distraction, which you just basically kind of led us into what we could go down a whole other rabbit hole on that topic. So if you haven't downloaded the app yet, we do have these new paradigm workshop series that you can dive into. I think probably in the next like month or two, we'll do one on mass distraction and really using our brain power properly.
Absolutely. And they're designed to be really sort of deep consciousness workshops. So if this is more of a podcast episode that's more like a new paradigm. If you listen to our podcast, this is the kind of flavor that we have a new paradigm, when we have stuff about like compatibility and how the world is changing and, you know, how our consciousness is shifting and all those kind of things. So if you like this kind of deep stuff, then there's a ton of that in there for you.